There's a clock.
You said you would take questions, right?
Sure. Okay. So let me first give a presentation, then you can ask whatever you want. Okay. The author of this essay, of the textbook, I guess, is working on the assumption that the brain is a tremendous machine, and he doesn't seem to believe in a soul. He thinks that the whole machine functions on its own. And there's no such thing as Bechira Chavshis, no such thing as Tzalim Alakim. This is, of course, against our religion. We believe that there's a Guf and there's a Neshama. And according to what we believe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted the soul within us. And that's what's called Tzalim Alakim. Tzalim Alakim is just like God is not forced into creating the world. God is not pressured into doing anything. He chooses on his own to do things. And man has total Bechira Chavshis to choose whatever he wants. There are certainly tendencies that people enjoy eating food, people have certain desires, people want to get a lot of money, whatever, people want to lead an easy life. There are certain inclinations to act in one direction or another, but there's nothing pressuring any human being to make a decision dafka towards one direction. If a person doesn't have bechira chavshis, that's what the halacha calls a shota. A shota means a person is a la badat, doesn't have bechira chavshis. We believe that man was created with Tzelem Alakim, that man has a soul. The brain, you were studying that the brain can be removed from the head of a human being, or from the head of a rat, an animal, and placed in a petri dish, and so on. I would assume that at that time it's just a marvelous machine. At that time it doesn't represent the soul of the person, or the soul of the animal. We'll have to discuss whether animals have a soul. But as long as the brain is still connected with the mind, our religion teaches that there is such a thing as a soul, a neshama. And that's what Tzelem Alakim is all about. In our religion, we believe that all of the mitzvot Shebin Adam L'Chaveiro are based on the premise that the other person has a Tzelem Alakim. The Medrash says that the different versions in the Medrash, how the Aseres Adibris appeared on the two stones. One version is that all the Aseres Adibris appeared on each one of the two stones on all four sides. And the common assumption is, like the other Medrash, you see the Paroiches in a lot of synagogues, the curtain in front of the Aron Kodesh, so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the Aseres Adibris on one stone and 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on the other stone. And 6 is opposite number 1 and 7 is opposite number 2. So that's a Medrash that presents that position. And says that there's a relationship between the sixth and the first of the Aseres Adibris, between the seventh and the second. So the Medrash goes on to explain the sixth of the Aseres Adibris is Lo Sirtzach, you're not allowed to kill. Lo Sirtzach corresponds to Anochi Hashem Elokech, we believe in God. We believe that God created man, B'Tzelem Elokim, and that's why there's a prohibition to kill someone else. If the other person is only a machine, a tremendous machine, a fantastic machine, with the 300 billion neurons functioning away, so if you take the brain out of the body and you separate it, you put it in a petri dish, then there's no prohibition to kill it. There's no avera to kill a machine. It's a baltashchis. But there's no avera of ritzicha. The avera of ritzicha is when the brain is still connected, when the mind is still connected with the body and the person has what we assume is an neshama. So then it's a prohibition of l'tzirtzach. And the basis of all mitzvah shebin adam achavera is that we believe that man has a tzelem alakim. I think my impression is that most of the psychologists today, this test book was written by a biologist, I imagine, or a neurologist.
Psychobiologist.
Right? The premise of most of the psychologists today is that there's no bechira chavshis, and man's mind is like a fantastic computer that's fully programmed, and when the baby is born, the whole computer is in place. And when it's time to get married, he's certainly going to go in that direction. He's going to marry a skinny girl with red hair, and the other one's going to marry a fat girl with yellow hair. Everything is all programmed. And any decision in life, there's no bechira chavshis. Everything is based on the program. I remember about 10 years ago, I didn't read the original book. I read a book review in the New York Times book review section. So they had a whole book on psychology. So the premise was that no such thing as bechira chavshis. And the author had a few problems. He had a few kashas. So a month or two later, when they had letters to the editor, I think these book reviews are printed weeks in advance of the Sunday Times. So it takes a couple of months after the people see the book review, then they start. So they had letters to the editor in a later issue. So one of the readers sent in a suggestion. Maybe you can answer all the kashas by assuming that there is Bechira Chavshes. That was Lo Bo B'cheshbon. The psychologists who wrote the original book, that's not even a possibility that there's such a thing as Bechira Chavshes. We believe in Selim Alekim, we believe in the Shama, we believe in Bechira Chavshes. That's the ABC of our religion. It's based on the fact that we believe in Bechira Chavshes, that there's such a thing as Charvi Yonish, that there's reward and punishment. Now exactly what this is all about, what does it mean, Selim Alekim? What does
this
it mean?
This is a good time for religious people to enter the field, because I think that things are loosening up. Things are getting so complicated that there are psychologists, not just religious ones, who are becoming broader. For example, David Johnson is a philosopher here. Now, he's Christian, but he's not, I don't think he's affiliated with a church. But he believes in choice and will and dualism. And there's a branch of philosophy, and I think Peter Atkinson is in it, called compatibilism, that believes that there is liberty. We don't believe in total chaotic freedom. We can't choose anything. We can't
restricted.
And if we do something which is crazy, there's no panim. Hashem says, you're on your own, Charlie. And even within Rambam, not Ramban, there is room in the Maimonidean system for some variance within the structure of the law. Ramban probably not. But I think that there's some philosophers like Dennett and some neuropsychologists are saying it's too complicated, that maybe there is something like free will. It's constrained by this structure.
The machine, okay.
So I think it's good that the dialogue begins. People will listen.
Our tradition has it that there are two psukim in the book of Koheles. One pasuk says, "Kvod Elokim Hester Dover." It's the honor of God to keep things quiet, secretive. And another pasuk says, "Kvod Malochim Chakor Dover." It's the honor of the kings to publicize everything. So the Medrash says that everything up until Vaychul Hashemayim V'Haaretz, till Adam Rishon was created, till the completion of the whole creation, God was known as Elokim at that time. He wasn't yet a Melech. A Melech is one who has people, subjects, over whom he rules. Like we say in Adol Olam, Le'is Nasa B'cheftza Kol, Azai Melech Shemonikra. After God created the whole world, then he has the status of a Melech. So after God completed the whole creation, after Adam Rishon was created, then God is referred to as a Melech. And then we apply the pasuk, Kvod Melochim Chakor Dover. We have the right and the obligation to try to figure out everything that's going on in the world. But whatever happened before the creation of Adam Arishom, we're not supposed to delve into that. That's the Medrash on the Pasuk Vaychul Hashemayim. Everything up until Vaychul Hashemayim, we're not supposed to delve into. What does it mean, Selim Elokim? What does it mean, Elokim? What does it mean, God created the world, Yesh Me'ayin? We're not supposed to think about that. And anything after the world as it stands now is supposed to conquer the world. Adam Arishom was challenged. He should have control over all of everything in the world. This is the wish of God, that man should figure out all the secrets of the Bria. The Talmud has the same idea, based on a different pasuk in Chumash Devarim. The pasuk says, Kisha al nol yamim rishonim asher hayu lefanecha. If you'll ask about what happened in the past, from the day that God created man, so the Gemara says in Chagiga, we're not allowed to ask what happened before Adam Arishon was created. It's the same thing as the Medrash. We're only allowed to study science from that point on, after Adam Arishon was created. So there is such a thing as Tzelem Elokim. We don't know what Elokim means, so we're never going to know what Tzelem Elokim means fully, but we believe that there is such a thing.
The only thing you all agree on is that I'm not Talmud Chacham. I thought in the Gemara Chagiga it says that you can only teach Maaseh Bereishis to one Talmud.
Okay.
But you could teach it. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't want to learn it.
I'm not the one Talmud. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Not
it's
sure.
In that Perek that the Talmud quotes this pasuk. You're not supposed to delve into anything before.
So you shouldn't teach it to anybody.
Maybe to one Talmud who is very talented. The one who knows should teach to the one Talmud. Okay.
Maybe one.
Okay.
Generation or.
But okay.
Not to the.
There's a famous Yiddish Bertel that in the davening it says in Shacharis it says Moisa Ha'odem and Apeima Oyin Ki Hakol Habel. The mila that man has over the animals is oyin, is insignificant. So the Welt says that the word oyin in Aleph Yud Nun is a rashitavis odam yesh neshama. That the mila that the human being has over the animal is that the odam has neshama and the behemoth doesn't have a neshama. This is not so unanimously agreed upon. The Torah says that if an animal kills a person, so the animal should be put to death. So the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim assumes it doesn't make sense that the Torah is going to punish the animal. The animal doesn't have p'chira chavshis, but the animal has a mitzvah of aloysir tzach. The animal deserves the death penalty because it killed the person. It doesn't make any sense. So the Rambam writes that obviously it's a punishment to the owner of the animal. It's a punishment to the Baal HaShur. The Ramban in his commentary on Chumash at the end of Parshas Noach after the Mabul is over quotes this line from the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim, and he disagrees. He says the Talmud in Bava Kamma presents a dispute among the Tanoim whether if the shore is hefker, the shore doesn't have any owner, and the animal killed the person, does the shore deserve the death penalty or not? So the opinion which is not accepted is, the Tana Rabbi Yehuda says, if the shore doesn't have any owner, then you don't give the death penalty. So that Tana probably thinks like the Rambam, that it's a punishment to the owner. If there is no owner, so you don't kill the shore. But the Ramban HaChumash writes that's not the accepted opinion. The accepted view is that even if the shore is a shore hefker, it doesn't have an owner at all, he put the animal to death. Why? So Ramban claims that the animal has enough seichel to understand, has p'chira chavshis, doesn't have enough seichel to understand to eat matzah and to put on tefillin, to keep Shabbos and kashrus and so on, but has enough seichel to understand not to kill a human being. He claims that after the Mabul, since Noach saved all of the animals, so all the animals have enough seichel to understand not to kill a human being because they owe a debt of gratitude to the human race because we saved them. And if the animal kills a person, then the animal deserves an owner. See, the Ramban is assuming that the animals have an neshama. The animals have an neshama. And when the animal kills a person, the animal is exercising bechira chavshis, and the animal deserves a punishment. So that's the question, which animals? How far do you go? Which animals do we say? All animals. Like in the essay, the question was raised, what if it's mosquitoes? What if it's a little bug that killed a person? So there is a passage in the Talmud Sanhedrin, the Gemara discusses animals killing people. Talmud distinguishes between a lion killing a person as opposed to yitushin, little bugs. So some of the commentaries on the Gemara, the Ran quotes those who interpret that a lion or a big animal that kills a human being, that's an act of murder. The animals have enough seichel to know that this is murder. But the little ants, the insects who kill a human being, that's just by instinct and not exercising bechira chavshis, and that you can't hold them responsible for the murder of the person. So some commentaries on the Gemara feel that there is a difference between various animals. Now, that there is a difference between the various animals, we know also. In the text, the assumption is made that man is a descendant. I think that's the impression that he gives you. The man is a descendant from the chimpanzee, and that's why we have certain limbs in the body which are no longer useful. When we used to be chimpanzees, then it was useful, and it's a carryover from that period of time. So needless to say, we don't believe that we're simply descendants of the chimpanzees. It could be that the evolution could fit in with what it says in Chumash, maybe when it describes the God creating man, maybe took a chimpanzee. That could be that it fits in, but we don't believe that human beings just the same as a chimpanzee. But we do give more chashivas, we do consider the monkeys as being more intelligent in a certain sense than the other animals. The Mishnah speaks about three different areas of halacha where an activity has to have koyach gavra. When a person murders someone else, he's only put to death, he's only chayv misa, if he killed the other person with a koyach gavra. Koyach gavra means with a human force. And the same is required of shechita. When you shecht an animal, you have to shecht with a koyach gavra and a tilis yadayim. This is a big question in the commentaries on the Gemara. Is koyach gavra identical with the concept of maisa ha'odom? A person has to do the netilis yadayim, and a person has to do the shechita, and a person has to do the act of ritzicha. Or should we assume, no, that koyach gavra is something over and above maisa ha'odom? So many are of the opinion, the Chazanish and Rab Chaim Soloveitchik, and many others are of the opinion that Kirk Gavra and Tosus and Sanhedrin writes like that. Kirk Gavra is not identical with Maisa Adam. It's something over and above. Why does the halacha single out only these three activities? Only Ritzicha in a Tilis Yadayim when you wash for bread, and Shchita is a deep dark secret, we don't know. But that's what many assume, that only these three areas require Kirk Gavra, a human power, human force. So the Mishnah has a dispute in Mishnayis Yadayim. If a monkey pours water on my hands, is that valid for Netilas Yadayim? And there are two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, the Suffolk, how we pass this. We used to have a professor here. I happen to like the professor. He used to teach world history when I was a student in the college. So he had his opinions about everything. So he said, you see from the Mishnah that the rabbis believed in evolution, because one opinion is that that's called Kirak Gavra. When the monkey pours the water, he's called a Gavra. So one of the students told this over to Rabbi Soloveitchik, so he got very upset. He said, that's utterly ridiculous, that's stupid. He said, the phrase Koyach Gabra doesn't mean necessarily, you don't have to translate it, Koyach Gabra, human force, human energy, means Koyach Noito, means someone poured the water as a teleological act. The person knew what he's doing, not just that he accidentally bumped over a bucket of water and happened to pour water on my hands. Someone poured water on my hands, planning to pour water on my hands. So that's a dispute that the Tanoim had. They only have the argument regarding monkeys, a kof, who washes Netilas Yadayim. If a cow or if any other animal, a dog or a kitten, a cat, would pour the water, it seems from the Mishnah, that would not be considered a teleological act. We assume that these other animals don't have enough seichel to understand that they're doing an act that's going to lead to some result. And a monkey, apparently the Tanaim Hasun has more seichel, and he understands that he's doing something that's going to bring about the result. And that was a dispute that the Tanaim had. Is that enough of a teleological act? Is that sufficient seichel to be considered Kirk Gavra for the purpose of an Atilis Yadayim? So the halacha does distinguish between, the halacha does say that monkeys are more similar to human beings than the other animals. That's the simple pshat in the Mishnah, just as by way of a footnote, the Mishnah Brura on that din in Shulchan Aruch about the monkey pouring the water, Mishnah Brura quotes two opinions from the Kesef Mishnah, from Achrayim, whether that when the Mishnah speaks about a monkey pouring the water, is it only with respect to monkey, or does it apply to all animals? Rav Soloveitchik thought that the simple reading in the Mishnah is that it's only talking about monkeys. The Tanoim assume that monkeys have more seichel than the other behemoths, and they're doing something for a purpose. So getting to the topic on the hand, the halacha distinguishes between three different areas of human activity. We divide all human activity into three parts, machshava, dibur, and maisa, thought and speech and action. In fact, there was a famous Hasidish Rebbe, Rav Hirsch Melech Dinever, who's known for his sefer, B'nai Yisoschar. His Rebbe told him that he was from Shevet Yisoschar. So he named his sefer B'nai Yisoschar on the assumption that he's taken from the Shevet Yisoschar. So he wrote another sefer that the Mishnah Brura quotes in Halach, B'nai Yisoschar is all Hasidus in Kabbalah. He wrote another sefer that's called Derech Pikudecho. It's something like a sefer HaMitzvah. So he lists off Mitzvah 1, 2, 3. It only goes till 55, in the middle of Mishpatim, and then it conks out. They're not sure whether he never wrote the rest or it was lost, but that's all that was published till the middle of Parshas Mishpatim. And in each mitzvah, he divides his discussion into three portions. He wants all of us to fulfill each mitzvah on the three levels of human activity, in the area of machshava, in the area of dibur, in the area of maisa. So machshava, he discusses what he calls machshava. He discusses what is the reason for the mitzvah. And dibur, he says, when you learn Torah, you speak about the dinim, so that's how you fulfill a mitzvah, al yidei dibur. And maisa, how do you actually fulfill a mitzvah? So these are the three areas of human activity. So when does the halacha require maisa? When do we require maisa? So the Talmud tells us, the Chumash says, a person who's a Rasha will be punished by the Beis Din. They'll whip him. So everyone is a Rasha. Everyone is a Rasha. The Mizrahi thinks that the Agudah are Rishon. The Agudah thinks the Mizrahi are Rishon. So who's a Rasha who deserves Malkus? So the Talmud has, based on Pesukim and Chumash, a whole system, how to determine. So what are the principles? One of the rules is you only get malchus, you only get whipped by the Beis Din if the sin, the avera that the person did, was a lav sheyesh bo maisa. If he violated a lav sheyesh bo maisa, he violated an avera. Without a maisa, he doesn't get any malchus. So if a person violates an aver by speaking, that's not considered a maisa. It's only considered a maisa if he actually kicks something, he walks, a kohen walks into the cemetery, he did a maisa, a nazir drinks wine, a person eats tray for food, a person does malach on yantav, he has to do some maisa. If he does an aver ayde dibur, that's not considered an aver. If he does an aver ayde machshava by thinking, that's certainly not called an aver. Then the Gemara has a dispute between Rabbi Yechon and Ish Lakish.
By the way, can I ask questions?
Please.
But let me ask one. If somebody says, if an officer says, kill him, that's not an avera, that's punishable by death? If he orders the execution of an innocent person?
The person who killed them will deserve the death penalty.
Right.
The other person sent a shaliach, so that's a dispute, and the accepted view is, ein shaliach ledvar aver. I'm not punished. If I send someone else to do the dirty work for me, he's going to be held responsible. I won't be held responsible. Question is, what if he thought innocently that I'm giving him the right instructions? He didn't realize. So that's a big dispute. Tysus is of the opinion, whenever he's b'shoigeg, he didn't realize he's doing anything wrong. He thought he's following the instructions that he's supposed to follow. So Tysus claims in such a case, I'll get the punishment, but they have to warn me in advance. The witnesses have to warn me. Many disagree with the Tosfos. They say there's never a shaliach. That's called ein shaliach ledvar avera. There's no shaliach when I send someone to do an avera for me. I send you to rob the bank. So you'll be held responsible. I won't be held responsible. There's no shaliach to do an avera. So that's a question. What if I told you that this is my money, it's my bank, and I need some money, and I ask you, I convince you that it's my bank, it's all my money, you're not robbing. And you thought that you're doing a mitzvah. You didn't realize it. Then it's a dispute in Shulchan Aruch. Do we follow Tosfos? That since the shliach was b'shoigeg, so then the mishaleach will be held responsible. He will be punished. Or no, there's never a shaleach ledvar aver. That's a dispute in Shulchan Aruch.
It's interesting. Because that's a psychological question also. I knew the lawyer for a woman named Patty Hearst. I remember her in the 60s. She was the daughter of the Hearst family, a very wealthy family. And a psychiatrist was a colleague at Penn, Martin Orne. He lost the case for that she was convicted because they had two contradictory defenses that didn't work that corresponds to the Shaliach issue. One was that she was brainwashed. You convinced him that it was his money, and you said the Shaliach, and the Shaliach thought, oh, my master's money. And besides that, they also at the same time used coercion. She was forced to do it against her will. You can't both be brainwashed and coerced. And so the jury didn't buy it, and so the defense lawyer is lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he blamed himself for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he responds to the two defenses.
So getting back again, one of the areas, there are three areas of halacha where we require a maisa. And if there's no maisa, we disregard it. One is in order to get malchus. A person who violates an avera, does a sin, only gets malchus, only whipped, only gets lashes by the bezdin if he did a lav sheyesh ba mais. Another area is chatos. If a person does an avera b'shogeg, so if it's a serious avera, which if he would have violated it, the mezid, he would have been chayv koris. If he violates the avera b'shogeg, he has to bring a korban chatos to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's only in a situation where he violated the avera ayidei maisa. If he violated the avera without a maisa, then he's not chayv chatos. The definition of maisa for malchus is not necessarily identical with the definition of maisa for chatos. Rav Elbala Soloveitchik and the Sefer Ankrisus shows from the Gemara that it doesn't necessarily have to be the same. And then the third area where we require maisa is what Dean Adler mentioned before. He's still my dean. Dean Adler mentioned before that Chilul Shabbos. Rashi points out, and it's based on Gemaras. Rashi says that it's only considered an act of Chilul Shabbos if there's a Maisa. If the person is Mechal Shabbos without a Maisa, then it's permissible. Then there's no prohibition. So we have to determine what's considered a Maisa. So there are other areas of Halacha where we also require Maisa. Take, for example, when you have to make Tzitzis Lishmo. So obviously you have to have a Maisa. You have to have the Asiyah has to be Lishmo. You have to write a get lishmo, so you have to have a maisa of writing the get. What else? Where else do you need lishmo? You bake matzahs, so you have to bake the matzah lishmo. So obviously, the baking of the matzahs, if you're going to have a robot who's going to bake the matzahs, and the robot is going to be, if the robot will be controlled by a person's thinking or activities, then we have kind of we'll have to determine, is that called a ma'isa? Then it's called a ma'isa making the made the matzahs lishma. And if you don't relate the ma'isa to me, say it's just label it as machshava, it's not called a ma'isa, then it won't be kosher matzah. So whenever you need lishma, so then obviously indeed that it should be called my ma'isa. Or in those three cases that we mentioned before, by ritzicha, by murder, by netilas yadayim, and by shechita, you certainly need a ma'isa. That's what many are of the opinion, even in a high, even a higher level of ma'isa, that should be called koyach gaber. That's something over and above ma'isa ha'odom. So the Talmud has a dispute in the following situation. One of the many averis with which a person deserves a punishment of malchus to be whipped by the bezin is if he muzzles an animal while it's doing threshing. He doesn't let the animal nibble on the food that it's working on. So if a person has an animal that's doing the work, lasachs mishar bedishoy, and he muzzles the animal, so the witnesses warn him, don't do that, we're going to give you malchus, and he doesn't listen, so we give him malchus. What if he screams at the animal, and the animal listens? He screams at the animal, and he frightens the animal, and it gets muzzled, but he didn't really do an activity. So one opinion in the Gemara is, he did the aver with dibur and the speech, and speech is not the same as maisa. We would have accepted that opinion, but Rabbi Yochanan says over here it's different because b'dibur is sabed ma'isa, because through his speaking, not just he did an aver, but if you talk lashon hara, the aver is through speaking and that's all. But here he screamed, and by screaming the same as speaking, doesn't matter speaking loud, speaking softly, but the same as whispering. But by screaming, he prevented the animal from nibbling on the food. So there, when the talking accomplishes a result, that's what he was interested in doing. So Tosfos interprets in the Gemara, that's why we paskin that is considered a ma'isa. The question is, if
there wasn't actually speaking? Speaking is defined as communication, providing information. That wasn't, that was directly acting on the animal. It was the same as if he hit the animal and shocked him.
Okay.
I mean, not with any my agreement, but psychologically.
Correct.
It's a startling.
Okay, so now the question would be, what if by my thinking, so if I have some wire attached to my head, and the wire is attached to the animal, there's physical contact, it's contiguous, so then by my thinking...
Or not, like the Bluetooth, like an FM radio, it doesn't even be transmitting electrons in the air.
So if it's only transmitted in the air... There is an essay, the Chafetz Chaim wrote the Sefer Likutei Halachos on Kotchim. There is no riff on Zvach Menachos, so he wrote his own riff. So he had a son who died at a very young age, who was a Talmid Chacham. So to memorialize his son, he has a Dvar Torah by his son at the end of Zvach. So the son writes this in the essay, and others quote that Rishonim say like this, if you speak and it brings about a result, I scream at the animal and the animal is muzzled, that's considered like I did the Maisa. But if I think, and the animal is muzzled, that's not considered a ma'isa. That's only considered machshava. There wouldn't be any malchus. He interprets the whole Gemara based on that. So I think that I think you have to distinguish between whether there's a wire connecting. See, the wire. I'm wired up. If I think, and I send my hand to do it, so that's a ma'isa. I did an activity. So if I think and I have a wire connected to the animal, that's like I stretch my hand out.
But it doesn't have to just. Facts. I'll give you the wire if you want, but when somebody is speaking to a Bluetooth, those words that they say are electrically connected to their telephone. You can't do that on Shabbos, right? You can't talk into a Bluetooth anything. It's still electrical.
I would assume that that's not called a ma'isa. I would assume that if it's not physically connected...
It is physically connected. How does the Bluetooth work with FM transmission? Don't get on these handlers.
I think it's frequency modulation.
Correct. But you're transmitting waves from the transmitter in your mouth or on your skull. I've done this in rats. You put a preamplifier. I recorded in animals. You get the electrical activity, and you have a little amplifier like on your stereo. It sends a signal off, and you have a receiver on the oscilloscope. You don't need wires. It's as electrical as having a wire.
I don't think any switches are broken or closed. I think it's pulsations in the medium and in the waves. But there's no open or broken. Like light switches went on or off.
So physically, there's a difference between having electricity starting and stopping. This is a critical point. Is there a difference if the brain is connected to a robot with a wire?
I think if it's connected with a wire, then it's like my arm is connected, my legs are connected physically to the brain, so that's called a MISA.
That's a MISA.
But if it's not physically connected, there are waves that are floating in the air. I think that's what the Chafetz Chaim's son says, and I think that's accepted. What he said, others say the same, that that's called machshava. So machshava, even though it brings about a result, that's not called a MISA. But dibur, if it would have been dibur and not touching, if I would scream at the animal or say something that would bring about, even not scream, say something that, with meaning, with conveying information, I say, hareza tmura. So I did the aver making tmura by speaking, but it brings about a result. Now the animal is a carbon, have to be makriven on the mizbeach. So the Gemara says, there you do get malchus, because he did the avera by speaking, and the speaking brought about a result. But if you think, and the thinking brings about a result, and it's not connected, if it's all physically connected, then it's like my, I would think it's like my arm, then it's called a maisa. But if it's not physically connected, I think we would not consider it a maisa.
So I think this is fascinating. So if the ikkar is the communication is information, and if you're telling me, I don't know how FM transmission works in detail, if you're frequency modulating waves that are always there, and all you're doing is changing the kinds of information, Rabbi, you're saying that halakhically that may be, make it permissible. Your whole future may depend on this. You can make Shabbos robots. So the important point halakhically would be that there's no wire.
If it's not connected. I think if it is connected, then it's a maisa. Then it's called my
it's like
my
the
legs
same
are my
arm, which is connected by a
I
wire,
think so.
Which we call the neuron. Right. 20th exam, neuron. Axon, right.
I think so.
Is this
sounds deep, guys. Think about it.
Say something. Is this connected with the way the metal detectors work, like outside of the old city when you're walking through? Because I know like those, they don't have like, I don't know, like you know about this area, but like, they don't have like speech switches. It's also something along the lines of like they specifically made those metal detectors so that there's no like circuits being open or closed, specifically through I guess pulse modulation. They were specifically designed for to like be on Shabbos, so to speak. I don't know if this has to do with if you know about that.
Don't know. We've got to work some more on the topic.
Somebody else, I guess the rubber did it.
So like for instance, like I'm not really used to like Shabbos. Like you can't tell somebody to turn on the light, but if you give like a hint with your eye, you know, and they turn on the light, then like. Is that constituting an action?
That's not an action. That's a prohibition that the rabbis prohibited me from asking a non-Jew to do a malacha on Shabbos. That's not considered my chilul Shabbos. I wouldn't be chayav misa. We're talking about real chilul Shabbos. Is it my maisa malacha? If there's no maisa and I didn't ask a non-Jew to do it for me, so then there's no amira l'nachri and there's no chilul Shabbos, then it would be muta. But to ask another human being to do a malacha for me, that's prohibited by the rabbah. That's amira l'nachri they prohibited. It's a different prohibition. By Orem HaMazik, if a person causes damage to someone else, the halacha distinguishes between Orem HaMazik directly, if I take a hammer and I smash your window, or I throw the hammer at the window, I smash it, that's Orem HaMazik I have to pay. Or if I cause the hezek in an indirect fashion. It's not permissible to cause the hezek, but the halacha says that you're not chayv to pay. So the Ramban, in his essay on Grama, writes, Klal number one, rule number one is, whenever a person causes a hezek al yidei machshava, there are rare cases in the Gemara, where a person causes a hezek just by thinking in a certain way, he causes something to be puzzled. If he thinks in a certain negative way, I make your carbon pigul. So that should be considered a hezek al yidei machshava. So that's called Grama ben Zikin. You're not allowed to do that. You're causing a hefset, you're causing a loss to the other person, but you wouldn't be held responsible to pay. And Yiddish folklore, they draw the distinction, traditionally, they draw the distinction between the reaction of the chassid as opposed to the reaction of the misnagid when they study the story that's related in the Talmud. Talmud says that Yonason ben Uzziel was such a holy Tana And when he studied Torah, there would be fire coming out, like at Har Sinai, when the Torah was given Har Sinai. And if there would be a bird flying above, the bird would get burnt up alive. So the reaction of the chassid would be, he would ooh and ah. Wow, what a wonderful thing. The bird got burnt from the Torah that he learned. And the misnaged would start to wonder whether Yonis and Menazil has to pay for the bird that he just killed. Is that Adam Amazig Ayde Groma? He was just learning Torah. He knows that every time he learns Torah, there's a fire and it kills the birds. Is that a groma or is that a maisa? Is what to think about. Now, involved in the robot, of course, is in the opening Mishnah in Bava Kamma. The Mishnah lists off four different types of damages that you can cause. So one of them is Eish. If a person made a barbecue and then he put out the flame and he was negligent and he didn't completely extinguish the whole flame, and then he drives back home. And then, because he didn't fully take care of the flame, so the whole forest burns down, the whole area burns down, millions of dollars worth of damages. So the Torah says that I'm held responsible for this damage. Now, the damage wouldn't have occurred if not for the fact that the wind was blowing and it carried the flame to distances. So that's called koyach acher me'uravoy. When there's a natural force that helps cause this hezek to continue to spread, so that relates back to me, and I'm considered the Adam HaMazik. Even though there's a natural force that's necessary to complete the hezek, that's considered Adam HaMazik. Now, in Shabbos, there are 39 prohibitions on Shabbos. Formally, there's a list of 39 malachas that are prohibited on Shabbos. Some of them, certainly, there's a koyach acher me'uravoy. Let's say you bake. So if I mix flour and water, let's say I mix the flour and the water before Shabbos, and I put it in the oven on Shabbos. So putting it in the oven on Shabbos is the malacha baking. If the heat wouldn't be on, it wouldn't bake. You can rub the top of the cake from today till next year. It's not going to get baked. You need a fire. So by my putting it in the oven and the fire is burning, I'm harnessing a natural force of the heat of the oven to accomplish the malacha. So they're clearly kachach mi'urba ischai. Or you have Zorah. One of the 39 malachas is a person has wheat grew on his farm, and you have the stalks of straw, and the straw, so I detached the kernels of grain from the stalks of straw, and the straw is lighter than the grain. So if the wind is blowing, and I'll throw the whole thing up in the air, so the wind will blow the straw away because it's lighter, and the kernels of grain will fall down. So there I did borer, I separated the ochel from the psolus without doing it with my own hands. I threw it up, and the wind blew it away. So that's one of the malachas. Zorah v'ruch misayayto, if I harness this natural force of the wind blowing, that relates back to me, and that's considered my maisa, it's considered my asiya. Or the Rambam gives another example. I'm hunting, tzad is one of the 39 malachas. If a person hunts a wild animal and he traps it, so that's a malach on Shabbos. So a lot of times people have hunting dogs. So you send the dogs to the other side, and I start chasing the wild animal over here, and I whistle to the dogs over there and over there, and the whole group, the whole team of us together, me and the five dogs, we trapped the animal. So the Rambam says, I'm chay misa. That's my act of chilul Shabbos. I harness the natural force of the dogs to help me accomplish the tzedah. The Rambam says, that's what it says in the pasuk, and I say, Sadevus lasasik ha-malacha ato v'hemtecho. If you harness the animal to help you do the malacha, that koyach acher me'uravoy, that relates back to me. So this is a big question in the commentaries on the Rambam. Does this apply to all the 39 malachas, or does it only apply to ofer, because that's where you always bake things, you always need the heat in the oven? Zorah, that's a definition of Zorah, v'roch misayayto, a hunting, the Rambam thinks that's a normal way to go hunting. So that's a big discussion. You'll look in the Sefer Afik Hayam, he talks about this. He quotes the different opinions, whether this applies to all malachas or not. There is another discussion of koyach acher me'uravoy, when I harness a natural force to help me accomplish a certain result, when does it relate back to me and when not? So there's a dispute among the Tanoim. If I want to sell real estate to you, karka, so there's one list of kinyonim. I have to make some kinyon. Or another, that to transfer the ownership officially. You just don't say, I hereby give you the ownership of the building. You have to make a kinyan. And when you're selling movable items, you're selling metaltlim, so there's a different list of kinyan. So how, let's say I want to sell an elephant to someone else. So one ton is of the opinion. You want to sell an elephant, you have to make a kinyan hagboha. You have to pick it up. So the Gemara says, how are you going to pick up an elephant? It's so big. So the Gemara says, you get a bundle, you get some twigs. What happened? What do you mean you get twigs? So Rashi translates the words of the Gemara. You get a bundle of twigs on the ground. You get the elephant to walk up on top of the twigs. So you cause the elephant to do a hagboha. I got the elephant to climb up either one tefach or three tefach, whatever you need. So the elephant helped me make the kinyan on itself. So I'm kinyan. And Tosis has a pshat that we know is not correct. Tosis says if you wave the cherries on top of the elephant is going to jump up. There is no such thing. The elephants can't jump. Tosis never saw an elephant. So they thought that elephants can jump. So Tosis says that the zoo rabbi, what's the name of the one? Slifkin. So he got into trouble because of that. He wrote a whole essay that there ain't no such thing as elephants jumping up. So they said he's an apikoros because Tosis said there is. So he said the din that Tosis said is correct, but that's just not true. Elephants don't jump up. That's the fact. Elephants don't jump. So that is the din. If you wave something on top and the animal will jump up, whatever animal it is, it's considered as if I made the hakbar with the koyach hacham yorabai. So the commentaries are bothered with the kasha. The Gemara says if I put nets in the river to catch fish, and then I go away, I go to sleep, and while I'm sleeping, a whole bunch of fish get caught. Yeah. So you're not allowed to steal. Someone else is not allowed to steal the fish that got trapped in my net because midirabbanim. It's gezel midirabbanim. So the tzoyis achoshen is bothered with the kasha. Why is it only gezel midirabbanim? I put the bait in the net, and because of the bait, the fish swim sideways. Or some of the fish are going to swim upwards. So the fish who swim sideways to grab the bait, that should be a kinyan meshicha. The fish that swim up, that should be a kinyan hakboha. So why is it only a takanim of the rabbanon that you're not allowed to be masigvul? You're stealing my fish. It should be a real din. I should be kind of the fish. So the Nesivus has a famous comment that Rab Chaim writes the same in his sefer. And the Chazon Ish writes the same in his sefer. They all write the same thing. That halacha, that if I wave something on top of the animal and the animal jumps up, that the activity of the animal relates to me is only if it's simultaneous with my action. I'm shaking the ice cream on top and the monkey jumps up to get the banana or whatever the ice cream. If the animal is jumping simultaneously with my action, or if the koyach hacham yorabai, I'm harnessing some natural force that starts to function immediately after I do my maisa. I do something, and then the natural force takes over. I did it in such a way that I know the natural force is going to take over, so then the continuation, the bringing about the result, relates back to me. I did the whole thing. But if I set a net in the river, and then I go to sleep, then later on, the fish, when I'm there, the fish are afraid, so they all run away. After I walk away, after I set the net, then the fish start roaming around. Then 10 minutes later, some of them are going to swim sideways, some of them are going to swim up. That koyach hacham yorabai doesn't relate back to me. So this will be relevant to these kind of robots. If a person will be doing an activity, and because of what he's doing, simultaneously or immediately after he does one activity, the robot will pick up. So that's considered a koyach hacham yorabai. That'll relate back to him. That'll be considered his activity, his maisa. But if you have a situation where I'll do something now and then I'll walk away and then a half an hour later something will pick up, another natural force will pick up, then we won't consider it a continuation of my maisa.
Is that how they have those halachic clocks or things in hospitals where you...
Grumman machines.
Grumman
machines are a little complicated. Not everybody thinks that they're legit. Many of Rabbi Soloveitchik was not so keen about all of them. He thought that there was a fundamental misunderstanding there. Usually those who make these Grumman machines work on the assumption whenever there's a delayed reaction, they consider that Grumman. So he said that's not the whole story. He said there's a little more to it than a delayed reaction. That's another discussion. I just want to say a few words about what is it called? The neuro enhancers. Are they called?
Adderall. Make it harder. You should read that for next time.
They have such a high percentage of university students on these drugs. That's scandalous.
And they're prescribed.
Yeah.
And
we usually assume that God created everybody with a mission in life. And everybody has a certain mission. We were placed in this country at this time because we have a mission here. God didn't create us in a different generation, didn't put us in a different planet, in a different continent, rather, because He gave us, He wanted us to come on this earth in this location. And He gave all of us the talents, and He wants each one to use his own talents. He doesn't expect us to do something above our ability. There's a famous comment that was made by a Hasidish Rebbe, the Rebbe Reb Zisha. He was one of the early Hasidish Rebbe, the same time as the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he said, when he comes to heaven, they're not going to judge him. Why wasn't he as great as Rebbe Akiva? Not mechuyev to be as great as Rebbe Akiva. They'll judge him. Why didn't you live up to the potential of Zisha? Why didn't he live up to Zisha? His name was Zisha. Another Hasidish Rebbe had a famous comment. The Torah says, "V'anshe kodesh tiyunli." God wants us to be holy human beings, not holy angels. Angels, He created angels. He created all of us with weaknesses, and He wants each person to attain whatever they can with whatever capabilities they have. We assume each person has a mission in life. So to go take these enhancers, it's really a question, is it really permissible, let's say a person is born missing a limb, a person has a disease, is it permissible to treat the disease? So the Talmud says yes. The Pasuk says Nuchumish Rape Rape. So the Pasuk teaches us that it's permissible. That's if there's something wrong. So then you have a right to fix it. But if there's nothing wrong, it's not that the person is born missing a leg or he was in an accident and he lost his leg. So if there's nothing wrong, so you're not supposed to fix it, so you leave everything the way it is. That's what we assume, that God gave the challenge to this individual and the location where he is, that he should make the best of his life.
You want your students to be B'nai Torah and to chazer, attend shir regularly, do well in their classes so they can get intellectually. I won't even go there. Make a parnasa, have a family, crew or room. And that means 17, 18 hours a day. They can't get enough sleep. And you want them to daven with kavana and shir, in morning and shachar. They can't do it, some of them, because there's a variability amount of sleep they need unless they take new vigil.
Or unless they take college in 4 or 5 years. So there's no rush. There's no rush to run into the working force.
No, we're switching roles here. Now they got to get out and they have to get married.
Take time. They don't have to get married so young. They'll get married a year or two later. There's no rush.
No, I'm supposed to say that.
No, they shouldn't work so late. They shouldn't work. They have to work normal hours. They shouldn't take so many courses. They should take a lighter program. That's all. And then I'll take college in more years.
Okay, so you don't...
I read the description of the fellow. That was something tremendous. The guy stayed up day and night, and he had 5 jobs, and he excelled in college. I'm sugar it. And then he was a wreck. And then a few years after, was a wreck.
What's the average amount of sleep that you get? How many of you get 8 hours a night or more?
Never.
Doesn't
How
exist.
How many get 7?
No.
6?
No.
5?
Okay. No.
5. 4?
On Shabbos I sleep.
How many get less than 5?
Just me?
That's not helping. The average adult needs 8 to 5 also.
Not healthy. It's not healthy.
It's not good.
Okay. I mean, who would make the argument that the drugs available to a person, God also placed there, and therefore he could use them as part of the environment he's in?
One could make the argument. I don't think it's correct. I think that God only gave us permission to tamper with the body, to heal the body, if it's broken. But if it's not broken, the body is functioning normal, except that he wants to function on an even higher level. He's doing work, he's getting B's, and he wants to get A's. And he can't get A's. He's not on that level. So he's not... So
is there a prohibition against it? Or you're simply saying, Bechata Bechaim, Refanolah...
We don't know what the all of the side effects of all of these drugs will be. So you're taking a risk whenever you take a drug. So if a person has a problem and he wants to solve the problem, so even though there may be some negative side effect, we take that into consideration and we take the drug and we take the treatment. But if the fellow is healthy, it's just he wants to be more intelligent than he is. So God put him into the world. That's his challenge, to function on such a level.
Zusha.
Yeah, I would think so.
I'm not sure. So what I understood, at least, that the drug, adderism, whatever, they don't increase your intelligence or your capability for you, then they just put you in a hyper-focused mode. Not so dissimilar from what caffeine does if you drink coffee. So it's not that, you know, oh, you're going to get AIDS because you take these drugs because now you're smarter. It's that you might be able to focus better, but if you're not capable of getting AIDS because you're not intelligent enough to get AIDS, these drugs won't help you get AIDS. They'll help you maybe get slightly better than you get it.
But drugs help you focus better.
Right. So does caffeine. So does coffee.
No, I don't know. Does caffeine help you focus better? It keeps you awake longer.
It can stimulate. I mean, it's debatable what it does, but there are lots of drugs that help. So there's Coca-Cola. So there was a Coke. What was it called? Jolt?
Surge. Surge.
What was it called?
Surge.
Twice the caffeine and 10 times the sugar. That they marketed. They said caffeine will keep you up. It'll increase your alertness. But then you crash afterwards. One of the blogs I put up was on Charlie Sheen, who's this Hollywood actor who was crazy. He was on national television. And everyone said he was on drugs. He probably wasn't on drugs. He had been on cocaine. He's very famous. And I'll show you the video next time I show you stuff. And he was megalomaniacal. We're constantly taking drugs. People in America are taking, I think Ambien is the most prescribed drug in the world for sleeping. So one physician I said, he says that he hates it, and the people who take it most often are retirees who could sleep another hour in the morning if they wanted to. But yeah, coffee, alcohol, they're all drugs.
And if you even use alcohol, you know, for simcha, how is that so different than, you know, using all these drugs?
Slight amount. A slight amount, not too much.
Slight amount. Shmuel has a hug.
Rebbe, isn't that a theory that, according to one of the Tanaim and the Sifra, that the juxtaposition of the Kohanim are not supposed to be drunk when they do the Avodah with Nadav and Avihu, is that they were drunk when they did the Avodah? But doesn't Reb Chaim Halevi Shmuel Levitz and others explain that they weren't like partying, like abusing alcohol in the casual sense? They were trying to attain a higher level of ruchnius, so they did it l'shem shemayim, and that Hashem punished them because He didn't want that avoda. He didn't want them to try to be more than what they were. They were tremendous tzaddikim as they were, but they were trying to attain a higher spiritual level.
Artificially,
through artificial means, and we see that it was a disaster.
So he interprets that was the sin that the Bible attributes to Nadav and Avihu. That's where they were punished.
What Nadav and Avihu were?
The children of Aharon.
Yeah,
so they became drunk the day that they brought Karbonos. So why did they become drunk? So the interpretation is given. They wanted to enter a higher level of spirituality. They did it l'shem shemayim.
It said the words that they were drunk. I remember.
One opinion in the Talmud is that they were drunk. That's why the Bible has the pasuk that Kohanim are not allowed to drink right after the death of Nadav Avihu. So he says, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz interprets that.
Yeah, because they brought it out of zealotry. It was an unasked for. It was a strange fire.
So he interprets the reason why they became drunk was in order to attain higher levels of spirituality. You shouldn't do it artificially. Very good. Okay, there's a lot more to discuss, but that's all for today. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.